know?
What do you know about talking to and inspiring your neighbors? Well, I'm talking with Danny Hankins, candidate for Pierce County Council Position 6.
This is Louisa Beal with Radio Tacoma, and I'm here with Danny Hankins. And he is running for Pierce County Council Position 6. Is that correct?
Yes.
Good. Hi, Danny.
Hello. How are you, Louisa?
I'm doing well. So it's good to talk with you. I'm very interested in why you're running, how you even thought about it, and some of the issues that are important to you. So you look to me pretty young. I mean, almost too young to vote.
No, you're flattering me. Look at my hairline, and I've got the bald spot going on the back now, too.
Okay, well, I'll put my glasses on. I'll be better.
Okay.
So what was the impetus for you to decide to throw your hat in the ring?
That's the most important. That's the best question. The main reason is because I go around in my business. I meet lots of people interviewing experts. State agencies were our biggest clients, and I meet a lot of people. They're like, if only we had this, or if only we had this, then we could do this. We could help the oysters. We could do this. We could do this. If only, if only, if only. But regulations stop us. And that really started to get me interested in what I could do. And I felt like over the years, I've met so many passionate people that work for the state or nonprofits. And I felt like I learned a lot from all of these people. And I built up a network of people in the public sector and the private sector. And so I kind of bring all that experience. And I'm like, well, I feel like to be a good leader, a good political figure, you need to know enough about each issue that people are facing to know how to inspire people, to know how to lead people, because they have to believe that, hey, you know what I'm talking about. You speak my language a little bit. And the other reason I'm big on communication, of course, is that I started asking people, and everywhere where I was in line, so post office, grocery store, when you go into the line that you think is fast and it ends up being the slow one, I say, do you know who your representative is? And I asked hundreds of people, and 99% had no idea. Right. And what that tells me is that they're not being reached out to, they're not being communicated with, and also that people are busy enough with their own lives just getting by that they don't have the energy or the time to get more involved and wonder what they can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. So talking about your day job, so to speak, I mean, you're a film producer, is that right?
Film producer and director, yeah.
Yeah, cool. So you do interview a lot of people.
I've conducted probably 300 interviews.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah.
It's taken me all over the state, Eastern Washington, farmers, just all over the place, been interviewing people.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've got a good idea of some of the issues that are important. So what do you want to bring up to the people about there, about the issues that you're going to be representing?
I think the most important issue is communication, because one thing I've noticed is that I watched a lot of city council meetings. Usually I'm the only person on YouTube that's watching. There's two viewers, and I'm like, one of them is the guy sitting in the room there, and the other one's me. And a lot of times really big decisions are being made and nobody's there. They're like, anyone in chambers? No. Anyone online? No. And then they vote. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that was a really big decision and no one knows about it.
Yeah.
And the only time that people show up is when they find out too late, and usually when they're not so happy about whatever the decision is being made. And so my position is that people should be brought in from the very beginning and be a part of the discussion. And to me, that's kind of like a level of respect for the voter that I think is lacking a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I mean, it's that low information voter that Yeah, I mean, they're voting, but, you know, what are they basing their vote on?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then, you know, there's the problems that we all see, affordable housing, homelessness, crime. I'm subscribed to a crime alert, and I get an alert every single day, basically. A shooting or a robbery or an assault or something like that. And they seem to be just coming more and more often. And then I also have a kind of a selfish reason, to be honest, that I'm running, as I'm a new father. My son is 9 months old.
Oh, my gosh.
And so he's going to grow up and go to school here, you know, right here in Pierce County in District 6. So I'm like, man, I need to work hard to guarantee that he does well. So there's a level of personal accountability there. So the way I see it, the success of other families in Pierce County is directly tied to the success of my own. Because, you know, if I would fail the voters, it means I would fail my own family, too, because they're in the exact same situation.
So I don't think I would consider that selfish.
Okay.
Because that's that whole generation that, you know, we need to be aware of and how what they're what's going to be like in 10, 20 years.
Right.
Yeah. So other issues. I mean, you mentioned homelessness.
Yeah.
And that's one that I have been concerned about because I started off doing interviews at an encampment that was under the 509 Bridge.
I remember that one.
Yeah. And then, because I got to know some of these people, and then they did like two or three sweeps, and I lost contact with everybody. And it's like, well, if I lost contact, you know, what about social services? Or, you know, I mean, it was like a family. You know, they'd have movie night and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's like they just tore it apart. And so, I don't know. What's your take on this? Because, you know, they're people who are just trying to set up a tent anywhere to get out of the elements.
Yeah, that's a great question. The way I see it, it's very simple. I kind of believe in the Finland model. In Finland, they've almost completely eradicated homelessness. I'm a believer in zero barrier housing. Because if you take someone that's homeless and you put them in a home, they are by definition no longer homeless. Because when you're, haven't gone into encampments myself, but I have spoken with volunteers that have gone into the encampments. And when you're homeless, you're just kind of adrift in a sea of like uncertainty, doubt, fear. And when you're adrift, you need an anchor. And that anchor is a house, you know, a floor, a door you can lock, a roof over your head. And I'm not a big believer in any qualifications. Get someone a house first. Get them a constant in the equation. No more variables. Get them a constant. Get them in a house, then work from there. There should be zero barriers to housing whatsoever. Just, and when I say it, I mean everything. I'm talking drugs. They don't have to get off of drugs. They don't have to leave their pet behind or anything like that, you know, their companion. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's addiction. There's a lot of behaviors there. But, you know, don't judge anyone. Give them a house. And then once they get stable, have those services there ready if they want to. But once they have that stability, then people feel like, okay, I can start building now. I can start growing. But absolutely zero barrier housing, get people in a house first.
Because if that happens, then they have an address.
Yeah. They can get services. They have an address. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that part, but I'm glad you just mentioned it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, well, anyway, I won't get into that. That's my soapbox. So, but one of my soapboxes is the environment.
Yeah.
And I was just at Ocean Fest in June, I guess it was, and they were having a beach cleanup and just walking around and picking up trash.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's amazing at what sorts of things they brought in. And I'm hoping to get statistics on that. Zero Waste Washington is working on, they were sorting everything, and they're going to, you know, at least start getting some idea of what's out there.
Right.
But that's just part of the problem. You know, the other is, you know, the Port of Tacoma. I mean, there has been great strides since I was young. I grew up in Tacoma. And, you know, it used to be the armpit of the state.
Yeah.
And so at least we're, you know, we're graduated now. Maybe we're the nose hairs of the state.
I feel like it's the city that's always up and coming, but hasn't arrived yet. But everyone keeps saying it's up and coming.
Yeah. But there's so many things that we can address from an environmental standpoint, which I certainly, you know, want to know more about. And so I don't know how much the Pierce County Council has to do with that, because I know a lot of the, well, Pierce County goes quite a ways south.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think they have a lot more than people think they do. I definitely feel that a lot of people see, I think one of the biggest ways they have an effect is development. Mm-hmm. Building. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it has to be one or the other. Whenever something's built, it doesn't always mean that Mother Nature has to take one for the team, mm-hmm. which she's been doing for too long.
Absolutely.
And the way I see it is, my philosophy is, we need to, whenever we do build, we have to try to keep things in their natural state. Or if things have been changed, have been built over, what can we do to return them to their natural state? And the reason I started thinking this way is because I was interviewing people with some of the Indian tribes for some of our videos about salmon restoration, oyster restoration, like the Olympia oyster. And one of the big things they are talking about is dam removal. And we went to a dam removal site and culverts for the salmon, like how can we restore the streams, or at the very least make the culvert pipes bigger and lower them so the salmon can try to get through them. And so I think the real opportunity there, because environment, it's related to just about everything else that goes on. And so, for example, with affordable housing, everyone's saying the solution is we need to build more. And if we're going to build more, it has to be done responsibly. So how can we do this in such a way that we're doing it kind of in harmony with nature? And I think this falls into the category of it has to be incentivized. Mm-hmm. You know, it, hate to say it, but if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. And so this is a thing where we have to make it that the right thing to do is also the most profitable thing to do. Because otherwise, the chances of it getting done aren't that high. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so the details of how that would be done, I'm not 100% sure. But there's a lot of people I could talk to that could educate me on that. Mm-hmm. But that would be my main thing. Bonus points. More reward if it's environmentally friendly, without too much regulation, because a lot of stuff is very overregulated. The way someone put it to me was, people that don't have a car were saying they have to have a Tesla when they could just have an A to B, you know, beater, and that would be good enough to get people around. And I know some architects and developers, that they say that the regulation just makes things too expensive to build affordable housing, to build parks, stuff like that.
Of course, that brings up my question about the definition of affordable.
Right.
You know, I mean, they talk about affordable housing. Well, you know, it's only $1,000 a month, you know, and who has that, you know, when all you got is a tent?
Yeah.
And then what? There's first month, last month deposit. I, you know, that sort of model isn't really working for this homeless situation.
Right.
So my question is, how do we get to the model of Finland?
Put people in a house model? That's a really hard one, but because one of the biggest challenges is, and it just ties, you know, the causes of homelessness are just, it's such a complicated issue, but one of them is that in this country nowadays, you know, pensions, retirements, people don't have it anymore. And so people that are lucky enough to have a house, all their wealth and all their retirement security is tied up in their house. So for people that do own a house, it's in their best interest to keep their property values high, and it's supply and demand. The less houses there are, the more their house is worth. Mm-hmm. And so that's why they're like, I don't want anything near me because that'll cause my house value to go down, and that's my retirement over here. This is my safety net. This is what I want to leave to my grandkids. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question about how we get to the Finland model, the way I think we do it is, we have to bring in people from the very beginning and say, hey, if we don't put people in homes directly, it's actually going to cost us more. Because we know in Portland, they were spending about $80,000 per homeless person, which is an upper middle class job. It would have been so much cheaper. I mean, you can just look at it as a heartless capitalist. It's cheaper and better for everybody to just put someone in a home, build it, and then put them in there.
I mean, you could just, if they're spending $80,000 a year, okay, to treat and whatnot, if they just gave everybody $50,000, they'd be, you know, ahead monetarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's crazy. And I think you're right. I mean, it all comes down to economics and the way our economic system is. When I start thinking about it, it's like, how many buildings in Pierce County, in Tacoma, are vacant? I mean, the whole thing with Galt Middle School, you know, a bunch of people broke in and started living in there. And it's like, oh, no, you can't live in there because it's dangerous.
Right.
You know, it was like, what? Is it more dangerous than, you know, living outside? So, I don't know.
No, you just reminded me of something really important, Louisa. A friend of mine is an architect. He's on the chamber. He was on the chamber board. I'm on the chamber of commerce board. One as one of the liberals on it. But he says there is a win-win, is that instead of demolishing kind of blighted property, we can remodel it. And that way it's a win-win. It'll give people affordable housing or give homeless people somewhere to stay, and it'll raise the property values around it. Because we've all driven by those places that are surrounded by a fence that seems to have been there forever, and the building's boarded up, and there's trash. And it can be done, because I went to film school at Florida State University, and so around the fringes of the campus kind of grew outward, and so there were these old motels. The type of motels where there's just a few rows of balconies and just door on the balcony, exterior balcony. And they redid it and made them all studio apartments. And that's where I lived. And they were really nice. And then they built a park next to it.
They can be. They
really can be. And so that's a way to do it that's cheaper and that I think is a win-win for everybody, is renovating blighted areas. And then later on, start bringing in parks and more public transportation and stuff like that to support it.
Yeah. So anything else? Are there other issues that you find? I mean, I kind of just went off on a tangent there, the homeless. But there's got to be some other things that you feel are important.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of them is crime and policing. When I knock on doors, that's one of the main things people talk about, is homelessness and crime, I think, are the biggest issues, maybe followed by schools. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to learn a lot more about it. And so I went on a number of police ride-alongs in Tacoma, and then I'm going to be doing one here in Pierce County. And the very first nighttime one I went on, I don't know, an hour into it, there was a drive-by shooting at a Eastside Community Center. And so we went over there, and there was like a quinceañera going on downstairs, and it had happened like a block away. And we get to the center. They had crashed the car, and then they walked to the center. And so there were two senior gang members in the front of the car, and there were three teens in the back. And the two senior gang members were 16. Oh. And the kids in the back were like 12, 13, and 14, two boys and a girl. And the boy, one of the boys already had an armed robbery charge, and he was only 14. And he had a pellet gun, but it looked like a real gun he had in a backpack. And both him and the other boy were strung out on fentanyl at the time. So the cops like trying to talk to him and trying to give him the talk like, hey, you need to get on the right path, you know? Sure. And then we get back in the car and the officer's like, man, that's the second time I've arrested that kid. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't turn it around, he's going to either kill someone or get killed himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so a lot of people, I think, especially on maybe the right, they're like, oh, a popular line is, we need to stop treating police like the bad guys, or, you know, we need to make crime punishable again. And they kind of have this stance. And I think the real solution is that we need to rethink what it means to support the police, because crime, just like homelessness, it's a symptom, mm-hmm. you know,
yep.
And the disease is a lack of hope, a lack of opportunity, people feeling like they just have no options. And one thing I learned is that most of these crimes that are committed, especially by the younger kids, it's when they're arrested, it's never their first time before. There's a stairway. And they, maybe before armed robbery, they stole a car. And maybe before they stole a car, they stole something from a store. And if you start working backwards, you get to a point where they just made some big mistakes when they were younger. And we've all made mistakes.
Yes.
Some of us have made big mistakes. We have regrets. And those of us that are lucky, we have people that care about us to point us in the right direction when we make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Or if you're really lucky, you have parents that can afford to keep you out of our broken criminal justice system. But yeah, if you go back far enough with a lot of these kids, there's bad decisions. And if you can surround them with people that care about them, because a lot of these kids come from broken homes, they come from poverty. Mm-hmm. So the job of keeping them on the right track falls to the community. And I feel like right now we're failing them. In the News Tribune, they even talked about like what's wrong with the after school programs. So we need, for the kids, we need a lot more after school programs, sports. We need to make sure that these kids are surrounded by positive role models as much as possible, because it's so much easier to keep someone on the right path than it is to try to save them from the criminal justice system once they're already in it.
Right.
And you see that a lot of the crimes right now are being committed by mostly kids in their teens, the majority of the crimes. And so I think the way we treat the disease is by working backwards and supporting the kids in the schools, making sure they have role models. And part of that is, I think, when you know, more sports, more after school programs, and some people might find this controversial, but we need to introduce youth to law enforcement early. And by that, I mean, like, you know, maybe meet the police, go to the police department. They'll show you what's around and, you know, show you what it's like to, you know, live a life on the straight and narrow. They need to know that it's not us versus them. Mm-hmm. They're here to help us. And I think that when someone is arrested or has some kind of encounter with law enforcement, it should be viewed as an act of service. And that's how the police officers that I went on the ride-alongs with, they view it. Mm-hmm. It's ideally your first encounter with law enforcement is your last encounter with law enforcement. And it's the first step in getting your life back on track is the way it should be viewed. And that's how the police view it, too. Mm-hmm. And one of the officers I went on a ride-along with, he told me the most meaningful thing was years after he arrested someone, the guy came back to him and he said, "You arresting me was the best thing that ever happened to me, and now I work with at-risk kids."
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a community issue.
It is.
Yeah. And it reminds me of an old Phil Oakes song.
Oh, really?
Phil Oakes was probably before your time.
Yeah.
But the chorus was, "There but for fortune go you or I."
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard a similar refrain, "There but for the grace of God go I."
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because we've all been in these situations where who knows what it was. Maybe you made some kind of mistake where you're like, man, if one thing had been different, mm-hmm. that could have gone really, really badly. And I got lucky. You know, we all have those kind of moments. So the other thing I think I'm trying to bring to the table is that we just need to try new things. And so, you know, coming from a video production background, one thing I wanted to do on my website, people can, I have VR videos up there. And I kind of had my neighbor, he built a special rig for me. He's like a mechanic and he welded something for me. And I had a virtual reality camera. So I kind of drove around the district with my dog and my son. And people, if they have a VR headset, they can sit in the car with me. And then we kind of drive around. And so I think, you know, I'm just trying new things. I think we need to try new things to reach people and get out in front of people, mm-hmm. you know, because if people feel unplugged or if they feel like they don't know who their representative are, a lot of people say, well, you know, I should. They have that guilty feeling. I should be more involved, but I'm not. Yeah. And I'm like, hey, there's no blame on you. It's the job of your representative to reach out to you.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't have to fight to reach them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well said.
Yeah. And yeah. Right now, I don't think that's happening necessarily. So, yeah, I mean, I'm happy to answer any questions about any additional questions or even different topic stuff like film school, anything really.
Whoa, don't get me started. We'll have to have another conversation about this. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you very much.
No problem. No problem. Thank you for having me in.
I am a voter. I am a voter. I will vote.
I will vote.
Even in an off-year election.